Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Scientists are preparing to lead the first ever major exploration operation in the Indian Ocean. The exploration team is currently in Germany's northern city of Bremerhaven. The scientists are loading equipment onto a large supply ship and making other final preparations. The effort, called the Necton mission, is expected to include a series of Indian Ocean expeditions over a 3-year period. It will officially begin in the island nation of Seychelles in March. More than 40 organizations are supporting the exploration. The Indian Ocean is the third largest ocean in the world. Yet it is still one of the largest masses in the world that remains unexplored. Findings from the Necton mission could affect up to 2.5 billion people living in Indian Ocean areas for many years to come. The research will be a major part of discussions at a meeting on the state of the Indian Ocean, which is set for late 2021. The team plans to complete at least 50 exploration dives in the Seychelles before moving on to other areas. Researchers will spend 7 weeks mapping the sea floor in waters around the Seychelles. They will use submarines to gather data about underwater life and drop sensors to depths up to 2,000 meters. They will be using many new technological tools. These will include new survey, sampling, and video equipment, as well as artificial intelligence and controllable underwater vehicles. The project's goal is to learn as much as possible about the Indian Ocean's ecosystem and how sea life has been affected by climate change. Currently, little is known about the waters below depths of 30 meters. Mission officials say scientific leaders have called for enforced protection of at least 30% of the Indian Ocean by 2030. The Seychelles government has set a goal to protect 30% of its national waters by 2020. Ronnie Jumo is the Seychelles ambassador to the United Nations. He told the Associated Press such research is extremely important in helping the island nation understand its huge ocean territory. Jumo said the Seychelles aims to become a leader in the development of what he calls a blue economy. This is an economy that draws heavily on resources from the ocean. The Seychelles economy is already highly dependent on fishing and tourism. But more recently, the country began exploring possible oil and gas resources under the seafloor. key to this is knowing not only what you have in the ocean around you, but where it is and what its value is, Jumo said. It is only when you know this that you can properly decide what to exploit and what to protect and leave untouched. The island nation is already feeling the effects of climate change. One example is that rising water temperatures have caused major damage to coral reefs in the area. I'm Brian Lynn.
An Indonesian form of durian has been sold in a store on the island of Java for what might be a record price, $1,000 for a single fruit. Durian is enjoyed across many parts of Asia. The fruit is considered a treat, but also known for having a strong, unpleasant smell. A group of farmers in central Java reportedly chose the J-Queen durian because it was said to have a special taste and feel. A farmer named Sudarno reported their comments. He grew the two rare durians, which were sold at a store in Tasikmalaya. They were sold for a little over $1,000 apiece. Sudarno was asked why anyone would pay such a high price for a piece of fruit. He said the production from this particular durian tree had failed in recent seasons. But a new fertilizer helped to produce fruit this year. Sudarno described the fruit's surface as creamy, like butter. It's sweet, fluffy and delicious, he told the Reuters news agency. Durian are often grown in small or family-operated farms. They are banned in some airports, public transportation systems, and hotels in Southeast Asia because of their smell. The fruit is sometimes described as smelling like an open-air waste treatment center or turpentine when ready to eat. Sudarno added that most of the 20 durians produced by his tree were not fully grown. 4 were offered for sale, and 2 were sold. The others were taken from the store after their quality worsened. Sudarno did not know who bought the fruit.
In the country of Japan, being told that your face is small is very high praise for a woman. In Russia, if someone tells you that you look like a cucumber, it means that you look healthy and fresh. And if someone calls you an old pot in Cameroon, it means you are a wonderful cook. All of these are examples of compliments. Words of praise. And as you can see, there are differences among places and cultures about what is believed to be complimentary. But most people agree that giving a compliment is a nice thing to do. In today's program, we'll show you some common language Americans use to give compliments. Let's break the discussion into three sections: appearance, abilities, and possessions. We will begin with appearance. This includes the way a person looks, the clothes they wear, and their hairstyle. You may have already used some of the common language structures for praising appearance. Others may be new. For example, you are or look plus adjective, as in, you are beautiful, and you look great today. A closely related structure simply adds a noun, as in, you are a beautiful person. In fact, this structure is also common for praising someone's abilities, as I will return to shortly. Other common structures for complimenting appearance are I like or love plus noun, as in, I love that bag and I really like your hair, and what a plus adjective plus noun, as in, what a fun tie and what a pretty dress. Listen to a short exchange.
Ooh, what a fun tie. Where did you get it?
Oh, thank you. I got it at a shop on 14th Street.
We can also compliment someone's character, abilities, or efforts. Here's a structure you heard earlier. You are plus adjective plus noun, as in, you are such a hard worker, and you really are an amazing cook. Note that I added the words such and really. These adverbs and others, like very and so, can add strength to compliments. Next is, you can really plus verb, as in, wow, you can really sing. You are great at plus noun or gerund, as in, you're great at bringing people together, and you're great at math. And you make a or an plus adjective plus noun, as in, you make a fine leader, and you make a very loving partner. Listen to a short exchange.
I'm meeting so many interesting people here. Sam, you're great at bringing people together.
That's a nice thing to say. Thanks. And I'm glad you're here.
Americans also compliment people on their possessions, such as a person's home or things inside the home, car, bike, electronics, or countless other possessions. We might offer the compliment in any of these ways. Nice plus noun, as in, nice bike, and nice phone. I like or love your plus noun, as in, I like your dining set, and I love this painting. Or what a plus adjective plus noun, as in, what a beautiful home, or what a beautiful home you have. Listen to a short exchange.
What a beautiful home you have. How long have you lived here?
Oh, thank you. For about 3 years now.
Some people may feel uneasy receiving attention and may deny the compliment in some way, but many receive them easily. A simple thank you with a smile is a gracious way to answer a compliment. You can also compliment in return by saying, that's very kind of you, how nice of you, or what a nice thing to say. Depending on the social customs where you live, some compliments may not be received as such. And sometimes they shouldn't be. People can make backhanded, inappropriate, or insincere comments that they try to pass as compliments. A backhanded compliment is one that may be meant or understood as an insult. Someone might say, for instance, "You look great. Wow, I didn't recognize you." This can suggest that the compliment giver thinks the person rarely looks great. Other compliments are considered unacceptable. For example, in the U.S., it is often inappropriate to comment on physical appearance in the workplace. This is especially true when a man comments on a woman's appearance. But it is acceptable for people to compliment each other at work about work. Another kind of praise is flattery, excessive compliments that are often given in self-interest. An example is praising your supervisor or professor in hopes of gaining better pay or grades. It might work on some people, but insincerity can be hard to hide. So it's always best to follow the first rule of giving compliments. Always be sincere. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Abraham Lincoln won the presidential election in November of 1860. When he took office several months later, he faced the most serious crisis in American history. The southern states had finally acted on their earlier threats. They had begun to leave the Union over the issue of slavery. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant talk about this critical time in American history.
The southern states did not want Abraham Lincoln to win the election of 1860. Lincoln was a Republican, and the Republican Party opposed slavery. Lincoln never said he wanted to end slavery in the South. He did not believe anyone had the right to do so. Yet he did not want to see slavery spread to other parts of the United States. Lincoln told Southerners, "You think slavery is right and should be extended, while we think it is wrong and should be limited. That, I suppose, is the trouble. It surely is the only important difference between us."
Pro-slavery extremists felt this difference was enough, and they were sure Lincoln and his Republicans would soon win control of Congress and the Supreme Court. Before long, they thought, the Constitution would be changed. Slavery would become illegal everywhere. Even if this did not happen, Southerners were worried. Unless slavery could spread, they said, the slave population in the South would become too large. In time, blacks and whites would battle for control. One or the other would be destroyed. So, even before the presidential election, Southerners began discussing what they would do if Abraham Lincoln won.
Early in October, the governor of South Carolina, William Gist, wrote letters to the governors of other southern states. He said they should agree on what action to take if Lincoln became president. Gist said South Carolina would call a state convention as soon as the election results were made official. If any state decided to leave the Union, he said, South Carolina would follow. if no other state decided to leave, then South Carolina would secede by itself. Governor Gist received mixed answers. Two states, Alabama and Mississippi, said they would not secede alone, but they said they would join others that made this decision. Two more states, Louisiana and Georgia, said they would not secede unless the North acted against them. And one state, North Carolina, said it had not yet decided what to do. No Southern governor, except William Gist of South Carolina, seemed willing to lead the South out of the Union.
Abraham Lincoln was elected president on November 6, 1860. South Carolina exploded with excitement at the news. To many of the people there, Lincoln's victory was a signal that ended the state's ties to the Union. To them, it was the beginning of Southern independence. Both United States senators from South Carolina resigned. So did a federal judge and the collector of federal taxes. United States flags were lowered. State flags were raised in their place. The state legislature agreed to open a convention on December 17th. The convention would make the final decision on leaving the Union. Several other southern states did the same.
This idea of leaving the Union, secession, split North and South just as much as slavery. Southerners claimed they had the right to secede peacefully. Northerners disagreed. They said secession was treason. They said it would lead to civil war. In the months before Lincoln's inauguration, President James Buchanan tried to deal with the situation. First, he proposed a convention of all the states. The purpose of the convention would be to work out differences between North and South. The Southern members of Buchanan's cabinet rejected this idea. The second proposal was a strong policy statement on secession. The statement would include an opinion by the Attorney General. It said the government could use force, if necessary, to keep states in the Union. The Southern cabinet members rejected this idea, too.
President Buchanan had to settle for a moderate policy statement on secession. It said the president could send troops into a state to help federal marshals enforce the rulings of federal courts. But if federal judges resigned, there would be no federal court rulings to enforce. Therefore, to send troops to a state where federal officers had resigned, such as South Carolina, would be an act of war against the state, and only Congress had the constitutional power to declare war. Buchanan accepted this statement. He was only too happy to let Congress decide what to do.
There was little chance that Congress could do anything. Congressmen from both North and South already had made decisions that could not and would not be changed easily. Most of the congressmen from states in the Deep South supported secession. They did not want to remain in the Union. Many congressmen from states in the North had been elected because they promised to keep slavery from spreading to the Western territories. They did not plan to break their promises. A few lawmakers hoped President Buchanan, in his yearly message to Congress, might propose a compromise.
Buchanan began by denouncing Northern abolitionists. He said they were responsible for the present problem. Their interference, he said, had created a great fear of slave rebellions in the South. Then Buchanan called on the South to accept the election of Abraham Lincoln. He said the election of a citizen to the office of president should not be a reason for dissolving the Union. Buchanan declared that the Constitution gave no state the right to leave. But, he admitted, if a state did secede, there was little the federal government could do. The fact is, Buchanan said, that our Union rests upon public opinion. It can never be held together by the blood of its citizens in civil war. If it cannot live in the hearts of its people, then it must one day die.
Buchanan proposed to Congress that it offer a constitutional amendment on the question of slavery. He said the amendment should recognize the right to own slaves as property in states where slavery was permitted. It should protect this right in all territories until the territories became states. And it should end all state laws that interfered with the return of escaped slaves to their owners. No one liked President Buchanan's message to Congress. Northerners did not like his declaration of federal weakness in the face of secession. Southerners did not like his declaration that secession was unconstitutional. The message did nothing to change the situation. Soon after it was read to Congress, South Carolina opened its secession convention.
Delegates to the convention would make the final decision if South Carolina would remain in the Union or secede. There was little question how they would vote. A committee wrote a secession resolution. The resolution said simply that the people of South Carolina were ending the agreement of 1788, in which the state had approved the Constitution of the United States. It said the Union, existing between South Carolina and the United States of America, was being dissolved. The committee offered the resolution to the convention on December 20th, 1860. There was no debate. The delegates voted immediately. No one voted against it.
South Carolina had seceded. But what must it do now? There was the problem of property in South Carolina owned by the federal government. The convention continued to meet to work out details of South Carolina's new position in the world.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.